Usually when you lock your front door at night, punch in the code on the alarm panel and see that little glowing green light, there's this profound sense of psychological comfort.
Yeah,
I'm like,
absolutely.
you've done your part, right? The defenses are up, the bad guys are firmly on the outside, and you can just sleep soundly.
Right. It creates a very comforting kind of binary view of the world, you know? You're either safe or you're unsafe. The perimeter is either locked or it's unlocked.
But today we're basically throwing that entire concept completely out the window. So welcome to today's deep dive. We're running a rapid-fire, highly practical, daily cybersecurity briefing, and we are zeroing in on three critical threat intelligence stories that literally just dropped on our desks.
And they are heavy ones today.
They really are. And as I was reading through this deck of reports, a deeply unsettling common thread emerged. The attackers out there, they aren't trying to batter down your front door anymore. They are taking your most trusted, built-in security mechanisms, your own administrative tools, and they are actively weaponizing them against you.
Which really forces a complete shift in how we think about defense. I mean, for you listening right now, whether we're talking about the smartphone sitting in your pocket or the massive cloud infrastructure running your entire enterprise network, understanding the actual mechanics of how these trusted defenses are being subverted, it isn't just an academic exercise anymore.
No, not at all.
It is the absolute key to practical security. Because, when the system specifically designed to protect you becomes the very vehicle for the attack, your standard checklist of security hygiene just doesn't work.
Let's start right at the consumer level, looking at a threat that goes directly after the primary tool designed to keep Android devices safe. The security researchers over at Zimperium's labs, they just documented a brand new Android banking Trojan, and they're calling it Rocarola.
Rocarola, yeah. And the scale here is intense.
It's crazy. It's currently targeting 217 different banking and cryptocurrency apps. But the functionality is what really caught my eye. It packs 137 remote commands.
Which is a huge jump.
Right. To put that in perspective, the older hook Trojan, which caused massive headaches a while back, that only had 107 commands. But before we get into what it actually does, I want to talk about how it gets in. The report says it starts with a dropper. What does that actually mean in practice?
So think of a dropper as a scout that carries like a blank blueprint instead of a weapon. When you download a malicious app, maybe from a website disguised to look like Chrome or TikTok or something, you aren't actually downloading the heavy malware initially.
Okay.
Right? You're downloading a very small, seemingly harmless program, and its only job is to slip past the initial security scans, sit quietly on your phone, and then reach out to a command server to download the actual Rocarola payload later.
Sneaky. And when that payload arrives, it does something incredibly brazen.
Okay.
It maliciously disguises itself as Google Play Protect. It
Mm-hmm.
literally takes on the name and the icon of Android's built-in anti-malware system.
Yeah, and that disguise is the linchpin of the whole operation because it uses that fake identity to prompt the user for accessibility permissions. Now, accessibility, it's meant to be a helpful feature, obviously. Think of it as a universal remote control for the phone, designed to let the OS read the screen aloud or, click buttons for users with visual or motor impairments.
Yeah, I use it to make the text on my phone bigger, to be honest.
Right, exactly. But when a malicious app gets its hands on that universal remote control, it essentially gains God mode. It can navigate the phone's interface just like a human user would. And the very first thing Rocarola does with that remote control is navigate deep into your settings and physically turn off the real Google Play Protect.
That is just wild to me. It's like a burglar breaking into an office building, putting on a security guard uniform, taking the elevator down to the basement, and just switching off the main alarm panel.
And then going back up and sitting at the front desk checking IDs.
Exactly.
Because once the real security is disabled, Rocarola begins executing its primary mission. It uses a technique called overlays.
Okay, let's walk through that. Say I open up my banking app. The report actually mentions one called Imagine. What does Rocarola actually do in that exact millisecond?
Well, it's monitoring the apps you launch. So the moment it detects you opening Imagine, it instantly draws a full screen, perfectly rendered HTML web page right over the legitimate app.
Whoa.
Yeah, and it happens so fast you don't even perceive it. You think you are typing your password into your bank's secure login field, but you're actually typing it into a transparent web form controlled by the attacker.
And it doesn't stop at just stealing login credentials either. The report notes it has a separate overlay that mimics the actual Android lock screen.
Yes.
So it captures your PIN or your pattern, meaning the attacker can remotely unlock and operate your phone even while it's sitting dark in your pocket.
And the active manipulation is where those 137 commands really come into play. It silently monitors and rewrites your clipboard.
Okay, that part terrifies me because I dabble in crypto, and wallet addresses are these long, impossible to memorize strings of alphanumeric characters. You always, always copy and paste them.
Which Rocarola relies on. You copy your friend's wallet address to send them a payment. In the background, Rocarola detects the format of a crypto address on the clipboard and instantly swaps it out for the attacker's wallet address.
Unbelievable.
You paste it. You don't double-check the 30-character string, because who does? You hit send, and the money vanishes into a criminal's account.
Plus, it forces itself to become the default SMS app on the phone.
Yeah, and if we look at how the global banking system verifies identity today, controlling SMS is a catastrophic breach.
Because of two-factor authentication.
Exactly. It allows the malware to read every single incoming text message in real time. When your bank texts you that six-digit multi-factor code, Rocarola grabs it, immediately forwards it to the attacker, and then deletes it from your phone so you never even see the notification.
It even blocks incoming calls, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if the bank's fraud algorithm trips and a human rep tries to call you to confirm a suspicious wire transfer, your phone just never rings.
It just intercepts it completely.
But wait, I have a question about the surveillance aspect. The report says it takes silent screenshots. Usually, if an app is recording your screen on Android, you get a highly visible green warning icon at the top of the display. How is it dodging that?
That's a great catch. So older malware families, like one called Cleopatra, they use standard screencasting tools, specifically virtual network computing, or VNC.
Right.
That creates a live, continuous video feed of the screen, which triggers Android's built-in privacy warnings. Rocarola completely sidesteps that by abandoning the live video feed. It goes back to that universal remote control, the accessibility permission.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. It commands the phone to silently take a screenshot, compress it into a PNG image file, and upload it to the attacker frame by frame. It is a much quieter, vastly stealthier approach that just doesn't trigger that recording indicator.
So, if there is no software patch for this, because as Imperium points out, this isn't really a vulnerability in Android's code. It's malicious software exploiting a legitimate working feature. What was the practical defense for the listener?
Defense here requires an active change in user behavior. First, confine your app downloads strictly to the official Google Play Store. Don't sideload. Second, make it a habit to physically check your settings and verify that Google Play Protect is actually toggled on.
Good advice.
But the most crucial takeaway today is how you handle permissions. For you listening, treat any unexpected request for accessibility access as a glaring, massive red flag. That single permission is the engine driving the entire attack chain. If an app asks for accessibility and you don't explicitly know why it needs to operate the phone on your behalf, deny the request and delete the app immediately.
That perfectly transitions us into our second story. We're scaling up now. Rocarola relies on a fake disguise to trick an individual user into handing over permissions. But what happens when the attackers don't even need a disguise because they've successfully hijacked the legitimate built-in tools that your IT team uses every single day?
Yeah, this is where it gets scary for enterprises.
Right. This brings us to a really eye-opening report from the Google Threat Intelligence Group, or GTIG. They've been tracking a sophisticated China-linked espionage cluster known as UNC-6508.
The timeline on this operation is just staggering. According to the GTIG analysis, UNC-6508 managed to lurk completely undetected inside the networks of North American clinical providers, academic centers, military health institutions, and various research advocacy groups for over a year.
Wait, really?
Yeah, from roughly September 2023 all the way through November 2025.
To stay hidden for that long in highly sensitive military and medical networks is incredible. And the initial entry vector they chose is fascinating. They targeted externally facing RedCap servers. Now, RedCap is a widely used web platform that hospitals and universities rely on to build and manage massive research databases. The attackers compromised these servers and deployed a custom piece of malware that GTIG dubbed Infinitered.
An infinitered is a masterclass in establishing permanent residence on a server. It doesn't just hide, it actively Trojanizes RedCap's own core system files.
Ow.
It does this by hijacking the application's upgrade process.
Let me make sure I understand the mechanics of that.
Right.
Normally, if an IT team discovers a vulnerability, they download a patch or a new software version. That new version overwrites the old potentially infected files, effectively cleaning the system, right?
That is the standard remediation process, yeah. But Infinitor intercepts that very action. When the administrator initiates the upgrade, the malware detects it, waits for the fresh clean files to be installed, and then
it injects itself right back in.
Exactly. It automatically injects its malicious code straight into the new version before the system even reboots. It basically guarantees its own survival.
It's like a weed that detects when you're trying to pull it out and instantly drops its seeds back into the fresh soil.
That's a great way to picture it.
Yeah.
And while it's embedded there, it harvests usernames and passwords directly from the RDCAP login page, encrypting those credentials and hiding them inside local database tables for the attackers to collect later. It also establishes a covert backdoor that receives commands through HTTP cookies.
Wait, cookies? Like the text files websites use to remember my login session.
Yes. Normally, security tools monitor network traffic for suspicious connections on strange ports, right? By hiding their commands inside standard HTTP cookies, the attacker's traffic looks exactly like normal web browsing. The backdoor runs silently on every single page load without generating any anomalous network noise.
I'm slightly confused by the trajectory of this attack, though. I mean, if RDCAP is just a platform for managing medical and academic databases, how does compromising that server allow them to steal the organization's emails? Those are two completely different systems.
That is where lateral movement and privilege escalation come in. Imagine RDCAP is a single locked filing room in a massive corporate office building. Infinitered gets the attackers into that filing room.
Okay.
But they don't necessarily want the medical data stored there. They are looking for the CEO's emails. So they start checking the pockets of the IT administrators who occasionally enter that room to perform maintenance. By harvesting credentials left in memory or compromising service accounts on that server, they eventually pivot out of the RDCAP environment and manage to compromise a domain administrator account.
Ah, so someone with the master keys to the entire building.
Precisely.
And once they have those master keys, the exfiltration method they used is where this gets truly insidious. They didn't install some massive, noisy data-stealing tool. They didn't set up an FTP server to blast files out of the network. They simply logged into Google Workspace and used the built-in content compliance rules.
Content compliance rules are entirely legitimate administrative features. They're designed to let IT departments scan outgoing company emails for sensitive data like credit card numbers or social security digits and automatically block them or reroute them to prevent accidental data leaks. UNC 6508 took this protective feature and turned it into an espionage weapon.
So they created a custom rule, which they actually hilariously misspelled as Patroit, P-A-T-R-O-I-T.
Yeah, attention to detail wasn't quite there.
Right. But the rule told Google Workspace to constantly scan the entire organization's email traffic for about 150 highly specific keywords. These keywords map directly to their intelligence priorities. Things involving geostrategic policy, artificial intelligence, uncrewed vehicles, and medical research. There was even a highly specific search parameter for chikungunya, which is a mosquito-borne virus that had an outbreak in China's Guangdong province in 2025.
The mechanism of the theft is the genius part, really. Whenever any employee sent or received an email containing one of those 150 keywords, Google Workspace simply BCC'd a hidden copy of that email to an external Gmail account controlled by the attackers.
If they're using Workspace's legitimate native BCC feature to route keyword-matched emails, how is the security team ever supposed to spot that? There's no malware running on the mail server. The system is literally functioning exactly as designed.
It is a nightmare scenario for traditional defense. You cannot rely on antivirus or endpoint detection to catch this because nothing is technically infected. The remediation strategy has to be entirely process-driven. First, you must address the initial entry point. You have to patch externally facing RDCAP servers. But crucially, you have to completely remove old legacy versions of the software. RDCAP architecture allows older regions to run side by side with the current build.
Which opens the door for downgrade attacks.
Precisely. In a downgrade attack, the hacker forces the system to revert to an older, vulnerable version of the software that they already have the exploit for. If the legacy version isn't physically deleted from the server, patching the current version is useless.
What about the email side of the equation? How do you defend against weaponized compliance rules?
You have to proactively and manually audit your cloud mail environments. Whether your organization uses Google Workspace, Microsoft 365, or an equivalent platform, security teams need to review the content compliance and mail forwarding roles on a regular schedule. Look for anything that BCCs or reroutes internal mail to outside addresses.
That makes sense.
And don't just look at the current active rules. You need to check the administrative audit logs to see exactly when rules were created and by whom. Finally, because this entire exfiltration method relied on the attackers obtaining domain admin rights, you have to lock down all administrator accounts with phishing-resistant multi-factor authentication.
Okay, so we've seen attackers bypass mobile security apps by pretending to be them. We've seen them bypass network monitoring by hiding inside legitimate email compliance rules. Let's take this to its logical conclusion. What happens when attackers go straight for the jugular, directly attacking the multi-million dollar enterprise security appliances that are designed specifically to catch malware?
Now you're talking about the perimeter. According to the latest intelligence briefing from Diffuse Cyber, threat actors are actively exploiting three critical vulnerabilities in Fortinet FortiSandbox appliances over the last 24 hours. And all three of these vulnerabilities carry a CVSS score, that's the Common Vulnerability Scoring System, of 9.1 out of 10.
Wow, 9.1 is massive. Let's define what a FortiSandbox actually does. The way I understand it, a sandbox is basically a digital bomb squad room. It's a heavily isolated, temporary virtual machine where an organization sends suspicious files or email attachments. The sandbox opens the file, detonates it, and watches how it behaves. If it acts like malware, the sandbox destroys it before it ever reaches an employee's inbox. Attacking the sandbox itself seems incredibly bold.
It defeats the entire purpose of the appliance. Diffuse Cyber highlighted two older flaws that are seeing massive exploitation right now. The first is a path traversal flaw that bypasses authentication.
How does a path traversal actually work in this context?
Well, when you submit a file to a web application, the system expects it to stay in a specific contained folder. A path traversal attack uses special character strings in the file name to trick the application into navigating backward out of that safe folder and into the core operating system directories, allowing the attacker to access files they absolutely shouldn't.
Yikes.
The second flaw is an OS command injection. This is where an attacker sneaks malicious system commands into a seemingly normal data input field, tricking the host operating system into executing them with high privileges. Both of these vulnerabilities were patched back in April of 2026.
The fact that attackers are still finding vulnerable, unpatched systems from April just highlights how slow enterprise patch management can be. But the real headline here is the third vulnerability. This is a brand new OS command injection flaw that was just patched last week. And the detail that Diffuse Cyber dropped about the exploit for this new vulnerability is wild. They noted that the exploit currently being observed in the wild shows distinct signs of being generated by an artificial intelligence model.
Ew.
And wait for it, the code is actually faulty.
Yeah, the AI-generated exploit code is currently broken. A fully functional, working exploit hasn't even been publicly disclosed by researchers yet, but attackers are already throwing this AI-generated draft at targets.
The fact that the AI-generated exploit is broken is almost reassuring for a brief second, but then it becomes completely terrifying. The attackers aren't waiting for a human reverse engineer to carefully craft a weapon.
Yeah.
They are using AI to rapidly generate and throw exploits at patches that were released literally days ago.
It's a process called patch diffing, and it's being heavily accelerated by large language models.
Hmm.
When Fortinet releases a patch, they're essentially publishing the solution to the vulnerability, right?
Right.
So attackers download the patch, compare the new code to the old code to find exactly what was changed, and then they feed that difference into an LLM. They ask the AI to write an exploit that targets the flaw that was just fixed.
They're essentially saying, here is the bandage they just applied. Build me a knife that fits exactly into that wound, and then throwing whatever the AI spits out straight at the target.
Exactly. It demonstrates an incredible, frightening acceleration in the exploitation timeline. Security appliances like Fortinet are massive targets right now. We saw a similar feeding frenzy in April 2026 with a FortiClient flaw that was heavily exploited in the wild. Attackers love edge devices because they sit directly on the internet outside the primary corporate firewall.
Right through the front door.
Yeah, and if an attacker can compromise the security appliance via command injection, they essentially own the front gates to the entire network. The fact that threat actors are now using AI to close the time gap between a patch being released and an exploit being deployed means the old enterprise standard of a 30-day patching cycle is completely obsolete.
Bringing all of this together, what today's briefing really proves is that the modern threat landscape is no longer about brute force. It is entirely about subversion. It's about Rocarola disguising itself as Play Protect to trick you into handing over the keys to your financial life. It's UNC 6508, hiding in plain sight, weaponizing your own Google Workspace BCC rules to quietly mail themselves your most sensitive research. And it's threat actors using AI to race against the clock, exploiting the very sandboxes that are meant to protect our networks.
The paradigm has shifted, absolutely. And for you, the listener, your practical action items today need to reflect that shift. On your personal device, open your settings and audit your mobile accessibility permissions. If an app doesn't absolutely need that level of control, revoke it.
Seriously, do it today.
Yes. And within your organization, work with your IT teams to manually audit your email compliance rules and forwarding settings. You can no longer assume that built-in administrative tools are inherently safe from abuse. And critically, prioritize patching your security appliances the absolute moment an update is released. The window of safety between a patch and a functional exploit is shrinking from weeks down to days, and honestly, soon it will be hours.
It really is an arms race. Which leaves me with a final lingering thought to ponder today. We just discussed how threat actors are actively outsourcing their exploit development to AI models, allowing them to instantly attack a firewall or a sandbox the moment a security patch is released. If that is the new reality of the attack lifecycle, are we rapidly approaching a future where human defenders will be completely outpaced? Are we moving toward a point where we will be forced to rely entirely on our own autonomous AI systems to patch our networks before the attacker's AI can finish writing the exploit?
It is an environment moving at the speed of computation, and human reaction time simply cannot keep up anymore.
It certainly makes you wonder. The next time you lock your doors and see that glowing green light on the alarm panel, you might want to double check exactly who installed the lock.